LimeArtTechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
That time.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the LimeArc Technical Net. Been going strong for over 44 years. Every Sunday night at around 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and chat with each other, and we explain things to each other. We learn from each other. We entertain each other, and I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will return with the usual link. If you want to reach me by email, that would be for mailbag questions or TechNet puzzles that we're always searching for, or if you have expertise in a technical field that suddenly explodes in the news and you'd like to share it with us, or if you'd like us to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at a space or NASA-related story. Of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. As always, throughout the week, I cut and paste interesting articles and YouTubes, and I put it on a link page, and you can share the links, read them if you have a case of insomnia or you're bored. And, these are things that I found interesting. Hopefully you will as well. You get there by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that should take you right to the link page. We have a chat room available. It's been quiet lately, but you can access it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the internet of the technical net, and I leave it on the rest of the week so you can listen in to what's going on in the repeater if you are out of radio range, or you left your handy talkie in your other suit pocket. You get to it by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you up a live feed of the audio of the Glen Oaks repeater. And I always like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the LimeArc Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of many people who have either moved away from the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys over the years. Their wisdom persists in the form of those audio files. So if you have nothing better to do someday or some night, go over to amateurradio.tv and pick a random entry and listen to it. It's quite interesting. Anyway, that's the usual links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, nothing much really special seems to be going on with artificial intelligence. OpenAI has ChatGPT 4.1. I don't know if the 4.1 is going to make a heck of a difference. We'll see as time goes on. They've also introduced the capability of writing software. So you can sit down and talk to ChatGPT about a program that you want to write. So for all the people that went to school and became software engineers because the future was software, well, the times are changing. Tomorrow there'll be tools, the AI, and next month there'll be partners, and in 6 months there'll be the guy that they fired you and replaced them with. So this is the modern world. We have to kind of deal with it as best we can. Anyway, so that's AI. We're going to have a regular kind of a session. I will ask for questions and comments and topics. People will push that little push-to-talk button, give me their first name, their call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science related. And we'll make a list, and we'll adjust the list if some people have short questions and other people have longer series of questions, and fortunately, most people are very kind about moving around, shuffling the order, so that everyone gets a chance to to ask their question or make their comments each Sunday night. So that should take us to approximately 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will join us with the SpaceNet report. That should take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So assuming that the laws of physics don't change and nothing bad happens to my shack and nothing bad happens to the repeater and I don't get kicked off of All-Star too many times tonight, that's what we got planned. So let the festivities begin. Anyone has any questions or comments or topics, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, and whether it's amateur radio related or just science and technology.
And to exit. PC Ham Radio.
Rich and Wesley recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk. It's a lot better if you put your name early. Because unfortunately, some people stroll in a bit late, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, and we're in the middle of a discussion, and, you know, there are other people on the list, and sometimes they get upset that they can't have their time. So put your name down now when it's very easy to put your name down. Hit that push to talk.
Dave, Whiskey 2 Delta Alpha Bravo.
Dave, can you give me your call sign one more time, please?
That is Whiskey 2 Delta Alpha Bravo.
Okay, very good, Dave. You got a question. Is it amateur radio related or technology and science?
I'm new to DMR. I just set up a hotspot or a Pi Star and have a handheld radio. Limark has a Brandmeister channel. I'm wondering if there's any regular nets or check-ins or social time on that particular channel that you know of.
Okay. As far as I'm aware, very recently the president has kind of made a move to populate a lot of the repeaters with check-in nets. So it's possible that he started one on DMR, and I haven't discovered it yet. So I'll ask the other people out there. I'm sure there must be at least one guy who chats on Limark's DMR repeater. Are there any scheduled nets on the DMR repeater? Anyone have any information out there? Okay, whoever responded, unfortunately, was 100% noise. I couldn't make out a single word. So if you have another radio with more power, or if you have you're using a handy talkie and it's positioned for comfort instead of for getting into the repeater, if you could take it over to the window maybe and play around with it and try again.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
If he doesn't get an answer tonight, tomorrow night on the InfoNet, I guarantee he'll have an answer. You know, the InfoNet is 30 on these repeaters, and it's open to everybody. So you know, even if he's not a club, he's good to go. Back to you.
Okay, that's a good idea, Paul. You could go to the InfoNet and ask. You could also go to Limark's website and look under repeater or net and see if anything is there. I don't think they've gotten around to doing the DMR yet because I've heard about their other attempts at other bands. They're setting up morning drive time and afternoon drive time. and I don't recall anything in the latest newsletter I read. But, you know, check out the website, and if you want, ask the guys over at the InfoNet tomorrow night. I'm sorry I couldn't give you a definitive answer.
No worries. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. This is Dave, W2DAB, on the side. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Enjoy your hotspots. I've been playing with them for many years. And, you know, the trick is to find the right talk group that fits your personality. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? I mean, there'll be an opportunity, no doubt, later on tonight. But it's always good to get your name on the list as early as possible. Okay, unfortunately, it's still noise, so I don't know what to tell you. We can be accessed by AllStar, by Echolink, IRLP even, but for whatever reason, the radio you're using is not powerful enough to capture the receiver, and all we get are noise. Okay, perhaps later you'll be able to figure some means of getting into the repeater. It's sometimes it's just as simple as kind of moving your whip antenna if you're operating with a handy talkie. But we'll be accepting questions as the night progresses. I assume we always do. Rich, you're first up. What do you got for me?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. As you know full well, I am building a portable operation. That means I'm building a vertical antenna. And as we've spoken about many times, I found out you can replace a whole bunch of radios with one or two radios if those one or two radios are elevated. So I did that. And it works. I cut it to 32 feet. My question is, I think the 32 or 33 feet is a quarter wave on 40 meters. Do I have to have different length elevated radios for each band that I want to work, or will, you know, the 132-foot radio, elevated radio, suffice? That's my question.
Okay. I mean, this is one of those questions that theoretically you could take down to 80 meters and have a bunch of guys have an argument over, because, again, none of this is written in stone. If you want to be obsessive-compulsive, and a lot of hams love to be obsessive-compulsive, they will tell you that to get the best capability for your quarter wave vertical with some form of counterpoise, it's best to cut different lengths for optimum radial. So the obsessive compulsives would tell you yes. If you in any way, shape, or form, if you can accomplish it, get a radial that's a quarter of a wavelength for 40, and get another one that's for a quarter of a wavelength for 20. There will be other guys who say, well, you don't necessarily have to try the ones cut for quarter wave for 40 and see how it works. Or if you can't get it that long, use the quarter wavelength for 20 and see how that works, and experiment and see if you can live with the efficiency and the characteristics of the antenna that you put together. If not, you can always put in another counterpoise. So I realize that that's not the ultimate answer to the question, but there's a lot of questions in ham radio that don't really particularly have ultimate answers. They have suggestions of in what direction to fudge things.
Yeah, cutting different length radials for elevation would be a real pain in the butt because I use two stakes, garden stakes, to hold the radio up. And if I had to use two for many different size radials, that would be ridiculous almost. You know, I was eagerly awaiting my WIC Experts AA55 Zoom, which did come today and operated all but 5 minutes and then went dark. And I changed the batteries and everything, and the thing just doesn't turn back on again. And I was playing around with, you know, trying to reset it by holding down the power button and then pressing other buttons. Nothing works. So it's DOA for antenna analyzers. But I've never heard anybody talk about using different size elevated radials, just one 32-foot radial or two. Depends on how much you want, you know, directional. Two radials at 180 degrees from each other, but elevated about 2 or 3 feet off the ground. Anyway, I am going to have to wait for a replacement rig analyzer, and we'll see what a pain in the butt gigaparts is going to be about this. Let me let it drop a sec. Let me ask you this on a different subject, but about the dead antenna analyzer. What is your definition, Roy, of open box? When you buy something that's an open box item, go ahead.
My understanding is it's a return. So say you ordered something from Gigaparts and you turned it on and you played around with it, and for whatever reason it didn't have the features you wanted or you thought it wasn't worth the money, and you sent it back to them. They can't, theoretically, legally, they can't sell it as brand new, never been opened. So that's what an open box is. It's not used, per se. It's just bought and then returned.
Well, this one came without the manual and without the USB cable, and that's not my definition of open box. Open box is just, like you said, somebody returned it, and then they resell it. And they resold it without two missing parts, which is really, you know, BS, I believe, on Gigaparts' part. So, anyway, it has to go back. It's, you know, it's a Ukrainian company, Rig Expert is, and I love supporting the Ukrainian people, but it's very hard to find where you can, you know, if I wanted to send this in for warranty repair and not back to Gigaparts, you know, where do I send this? They only have an address in Ukraine, but I think they have two offices in the United States. Maybe somebody knows, if they've ever dealt with rig experts in the United States. Go ahead, Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, I dealt with them. They're very nice guys. Unless they've changed since my experience, they have a repair technician who actually lives in Canada. And again, unless they hired more people, what happens is they tell you to send it to a P.O. box number in, I think, Albany, someplace upstate New York, and the technician gets into his car once a week and drives across the Canadian-American border and picks up the P.O. box stuff and fixes it. Let me just ask you a little question, just out of curiosity's sake. Did you smell any kind of burnt plastic when it failed?
Oh, there wasn't anything like that. It just, I was happily using it, the screen went black, and that was the end of it. I tested the batteries, I replaced the batteries, all the batteries were full charged, and the thing just went black.
Okay, mine, the voltage regulator chip burnt out, and I had it a couple of years. It was still under warranty, and I shipped it to upstate New York, and a couple of weeks later I got it back, and haven't had any problems with it since. But, you know, I mean, that's if you have it, and it fails in the middle of your warranty period, not you know, a day after you got it. So, although I'm not a big fan of Gigaparts, I prefer HRO, and I really like DX Engineering. Hopefully there'll be mentions about it. They really shouldn't give you a hard time. And unfortunately, you know, when people return stuff to retailers, a lot of times they're kind of sloppy and they're careless and they forget to put every little piece that was originally in the box. I've experienced that. I bought what was termed refurbished, and found that I had to reset the device because the memory had a set up from a previous owner who returned it. So theoretically, yeah, it's supposed to just be opened and it should look like it's a virgin, but a lot of customers are sloppy and retailers are not really doing the best job that they can. So if it looks like most of it got put in back in the box, they resell it and, you know, tell people to look up manuals on the internet and other such things. So I wish you good luck with that one. I saw that you sent me, before it failed, you sent me a picture of a Smith chart. You still like to use Smith charts to scan antennas. You know, when I get a chance, I'm going to load it into my iPad and do a little doodling drawing, and I'll hopefully give you a good idea of what those curves meant on your Smith chart. But, you know, just for the heck of it, why Smith chart? Why don't you just scan the SWR?
So because this is for the antenna I'm talking on right now. You know, my problem with not hearing Boston ATC anymore. The SWR line is all over the place. It's just up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down throughout the scan range, which was 140 to 450. So I thought maybe the Smith chart would reveal something more than meaningless SWR sweep. That's why I sent you that.
Okay, I like I've always said, it's to me at least, it's far easier to interpret an SWR sweep than a Smith chart. Smith chart is very good if you want to know what the reactances and the resistances and what the angle of the impedance is. But all that you're really interested in is fundamentally the absolute impedance. You want it to be close to 50. So theoretically, your sweep should at least have two dips in it, one around 2 meters and the other around 70 centimeters because it's a dual antenna. And the rest of it can be all over the place because it's not designed to be resonant at anything but 2 meters and 70 centimeters. So is it at all like that? I mean, are there at least two dips, and are those two dips at least significantly near or on 2 meters and 70 centimeters?
I remember doing a sweep that was like that in the past. These have, there are 20 dips between 2 meters and 440, or 30 dips. That's why it's It's like an erroneous reading. Not erroneous, but it's telling me something is wrong. I wish they were just Q-tips, but they're not. Go ahead.
Okay. Did you have an opportunity to run your coax cable through the TDR function of your nano VNA?
I did not do that. In fact, I was going to ask you, how actually do you do that? Do you get a TDR reading on the nano?
Nope.
It's one of the selections. Like I said before, last week, the best thing is to watch a YouTube, and they'll show you exactly, because there's a lot of submenus. So you go to the submenu selection and pick TDR. Make sure that the coax, well, it's not that important, the velocity factor, if you don't really care about knowing the length, because the only thing that entering an accurate velocity factor will tell you if it shows a discontinuity, you know, 20 feet in, that's where the problem lies. But if you know what the velocity factor is, there's a place to enter it. It gives you a preset velocity factor, but you can change it to the correct one for that given coax cable. And you just run a scan. And like I said, just watch the YouTube. It's very simple.
All right, I'll do that. I haven't seen a TDR button, you know, on the submenus of the nano VNA, but I'm sure it's there someplace.
Yeah, it's there. I don't exactly remember where the submenu was, because I mentioned about a month or two ago for my other club, Kings County Radio Club, I did a presentation on nano VNAs, and one of the things that I showed them was how to measure the length of a coax cable if you're too lazy to sit there and play with a ruler and measure it yourself. So it's definitely there because I used it. So and like I said, the problem is that there's so many submenus that it's nice to have a little map. Usually nano VNAs come with a little printout that has the all the menus and submenus printed out on a piece of paper. So if you got something like that, it may still be in the package, in the holder that the nano VNA came in.
I do have that. I'll take a look at that. When you're reading the TDR sweep, what are you looking for? Where the line shoots way up or way down?
Yeah, there'll be a discontinuity in the signal, and that means that there's a abrupt disruption of the 50-ohm nominal impedance of your coax cable.
All right, I will, in fact, I'll take a look at that as the TechNet is in progress. All right, Roy, thanks. I'm so disappointed with this rig expert AA55 that now this whole thing's going to probably take a couple of weeks to iron out. And I'm not very happy with Gigaparts. On a little tab that was used to seal the box, it was written, no manual, no cable. That's not open box to me. That's not open box at all. And I hope they don't charge me with shipping back to them, which they probably will. W2BZ.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. My reason for initially not being a big fan of Gigaparts was that I bought a bunch of things with the understanding that if I bought some, I think if my order went above $100, the shipping was free. And what happened was they didn't list anything as back ordered, but when they shipped it, they listed part of the order as back order, and that dropped the price the total price of the order at that time, and so they slapped a shipping fee on this one, and when the back-ordered stuff was going to be available, they were going to ship, they were going to charge me shipping for that too, since the two split orders didn't, you know, weren't above $100 for both of them. So I thought that was real sleazy crap. I hope they treat you better than they treated me. What I did after that was simply, you know, go to HRO and go to DX Engineering from that point on.
And that's what I'll do. I have a real bad taste in my mouth because this didn't come with any packaging at all. I mean, not box packaging, but like the analyzer itself was just in an open, was just open in the box, hardly loosely fitting into the molding of the interior of the box, and that was it. I even saw some dirt on the white part of the inside of the box, a little smudge like somebody's fingerprint. Got a very bad taste in my mouth for this company, you know, and that's why Amazon was Amazon. If this was Amazon, it would go back tomorrow and I'd get a replacement tomorrow or the next day. That's the unbelievable beauty of Amazon, as opposed to this, where I'm going to have to, like, you know, go through all this crap with them. But DX Engineering, I think, is the cleanest of them all. HRO, I sent, as we were talking last night, I sent back a headset, and HRO was giving me a lot of problems about it. The salesman actually got angry on the phone about it. So, I think DX Engineering is the class of ham radio retailers.
KC2GS. I agree with you, Rich. I try, generally speaking, I try to buy through DX Engineering. The guys are professional, helpful. They list things if they're back-ordered, and if they're not back-ordered and you order it within 24 hours, you know, that evening they start packing up the boxes and shipping them out. It's a professional company, and I appreciate that. So if I can get something through DX Engineering, that's the first place I look for my amateur radio stuff. I don't really do Amazon because I find that Amazon is either a third party to Gigaparts, and then you're stuck with the same problem, or it's Chinese stuff of kind of mediocre guests. Guess as best you can, quality control issues. But again, they're not cheap, but they're worth it. So, I mean, that's the usual practice I have, that, you know, I don't go around trying to save a nickel and lose a dollar. And, you know, a lot of these other retailers kind of cut corners and they cut prices a little bit, but they usually snip at the consumer as much as anyone else. So I prefer a more professional organization.
Well, when it says, when the item says shipped and sold by, because I looked up an AA55 on Amazon, and it said shipped and sold by Gigaparts, that means that you're dealing with Gigaparts, not Amazon, really. And if you want to return it, you have to deal with Gigaparts. But if it says sold by Gigaparts, shipped by Amazon or something, I think then you can return it. Or maybe the other way around. No, it would be, you know, the thing you want with Amazon is sold and shipped by Amazon. Because then you're just dealing with Amazon. You don't have to deal with the original manufacturer. But I'll get this sorted out. It's just going to take some frustrating time. And I don't know. I don't like the way they sent me this product at all. I think it's my last Gigaparts purchase. Anyway, that's That's it. Thanks. WTBZ.
WTBZ.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yes, Jeff.
Hi, everybody. Chat WP2, Amateur Ham King. BC, it's like a vertical antenna. That's the fun of amateur radio. You got to do a lot of experimenting. There's no such thing as you can read it in a book someplace and erect it in your backyard and expect it to be, you know, working exactly like the article or the book or wherever the information they sent you is going to happen. It's a lot of experimentation. That's the fun of amateur radio, building an antenna. sometimes you have to build five antennas before you get one that you're happy with. I finally found one that I built, the best antenna I ever built. I'm not going to tell you what it is, for HF. And every time the wind blows more than 15, 20 miles an hour, I lower it. I have pulleys. I lower it halfway down. I don't want anything to happen to my wonderful antenna because it's the first one in my lifetime. We have to build them like probably 100 antennas in 60 years. It works beautifully. I mean, you got to drop for 1 second. I don't want anything to happen to my wonderful antenna. I treat it like a baby. Getting too old to be building new ones. I'm tired of building antennas after all this time. An offer to you. I know, I think I looked you up on the internet, on QIZ. They had you down as Riverhead. Maybe that's where you live or something. But anyway, if you want to borrow my MFJ-269-something-something in perfect working shape, you can keep it for a couple months and use my MFJ unit that's working great. And it's where you can continue with your experimentations there. So if you want to drive all the way in into almost Queens some early morning, I'll show you my nice station. And I'll lend you that thing on a long-term loan. I don't use it. It's on the shelf. I'm done. I ain't building no more antennas. All right, back to net. WP2AHK.
Okay, thank you very much, Chet. And the beauty and the problem of antennas is it's not isolated in the design. Your location is an important factor in how well a given antenna operates. So, you know, someone might have a G5RV and tell everyone that it's the greatest antenna in their lives, and another person who put it up in their very unique, different residence might say that, I don't know what you're talking about, I tried it and it was garbage. So, unfortunately, it's not a hard science. It's kind of a squishy, soft one because the environment plays a strategic part in how antennas operate. Would you agree?
Jeff, I think Roy asked you that question. But why won't you tell us what kind of antenna it is?
Well, it's a secret antenna. I can only tell you one little thing. It uses silverized metal. no big thing. But it's my baby now. I'm getting tired of it, but luckily I could put it up and take it down in 3 or 4 minutes. I got pulleys. But I had so much fun building it, actually. It's a fan dipole, but it's only for 3 bands, fan dipole. And the way I built it, the wires are not, each band is not, the wires are not close to each other. So they're far away from the next wire, and I was able to individually tune for each band. And after a while, after the number 16 wire starts to stretch a little, I notice the SWR changes. I can cut off a little bit or add a little little bit over the, you know, period of time. Because I didn't actually cut the wire at the end. I just wrapped it at the end. There's an insulator at the ends, and I have plenty of wire extra on the ends there, and I can make adjustments as needed. But it does have plating, silver plating. It's a silver plated copper wire. So at any rate, it's not very strong. I'd love to have a number 12 wire up in the air, and then I can not worry about it anymore. So whenever the wind blows a little, sometimes I'm off the air for a couple of days. I don't want it to break. I'm not saying it's that fragile. The thing is holding up pretty well, and probably it'll go to 50 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour. But as I said, I'm 80 years old now, and I finally found something that I really like and works well, and I don't want to make new antennas anymore after all these years.
Very good, Chet. You've mentioned this antenna a few times in the past, so it's in the archives, even if you didn't set up today. Did you ever consider some copper-clad steel wire? You know, the conductivity of copper is relatively close to silver.
Yeah, I've worked with that before. I have worked with that before. It is what it is. I bought the material and not expecting it to be so much fun to build and to erect and to adjust. I noticed that when I built this antenna and it's white space, so, you know, the wires are far apart, you know, except for where, you know, you hook up the coax. But I'd say the antenna at the ends, you know, of each band, they're about 2 or 3 feet away from each other, and they don't seem to interact with each other. So I can actually individually, I can actually individually adjust one of the three bands without affecting the others. Believe it or not, I swear. Some people say, yeah, you can't do that. If you cut one band, you're going to affect the other. Well, in my case, no. I mean, the wires are far enough apart, and I can keep, and it's steady, too. I'm looking at, I have a SWR indication inside in my linear amplifier. It tells me, you know, how the SWR is. And it ain't moving. It's solid. It ain't moving. It's just staying there. So, at any rate, it's been up a couple of years now, and, yes, copper weld wire is good. It's kind of difficult if you, I've had trouble with that, too, on different installations. Especially long installations, kind of hard to work with at times. You know, it's very stiff. The wire I have is copper, you know, copper type wire, and it's flexible, very flexible. Probably has 500 strands inside it. It's nice stuff. I paid a little extra money for it.
Yeah, the copper clad steel. I think they use spring steel. So. It's not that it's tough. It's that you could bend it with force, but that it'll spring back to its original shape most of the time. So it can be a major nuisance. But I can certainly understand that what you're doing is you're taking a fan dipole, and rather than the I've had a couple of fan dipoles, they're usually about an inch away and they're too close and they couple. They capacitively couple and they change each wire's resonance. So you have it sort of like the spokes of a wheel. So that there's, it's relatively far apart and they're not coupling too closely and they have far less interaction. So I could understand that. The downside is it takes up a lot more space that way.
WB2HK. Well, the space you're talking about is vertical space. Today, I had it down. The wind was blowing like crazy, and I went outside for a few minutes. I had my station in the garage, and I put the headphones on. 20 meters was dead all day, pretty much so. And I heard a couple stations in there, and this guy had this particular station in Italy, this is in the afternoon around maybe 4 o'clock, and My antenna's down. It's close to the, pretty close to the ground. It's like 20 feet, not even 20 feet, maybe 16 feet above the ground, and the lowest element. And he had a pile up. I'm running 400 watts. And, yeah, lucky. It's a lucky thing, but I called him, and everybody else was calling him, and he came right back to me in early. So, I was very happy, and after I worked him, I shut the rig off. I was very happy. Sometimes I just do that. I make one contact, I'm not giving up. I that's enough for me. One contact, I got the guy, and then I go in the house and go about my other things, you know. But this thing is working pretty doggone good. So I really like it, and it's on, as I say, it's on rollers, so I can turnbuckles, where I can bring it up and down real quick. Doesn't even take 5 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, and the whole antenna's down to wherever I want to put it. I can lower the whole feed line, the whole thing. It's unique, and when I want to put it back up, it doesn't even take 5 minutes to just pull on the wires and pull three different wires, and it goes back up, and not like 15, 20 minutes to put the antenna up and down. And it looks nice, actually. It really looks nice. This thing is looking. Nobody looks at it except me, but I'm proud of it.
Well, you should be. It sounds like a great antenna. I was on the radio this morning from about 11 to 1. It was a little bit of activity on 20, but I'm getting concerned about 10 meters. It's acting a lot like it did last spring and summer, where no matter what the sunspot cycle was, there was no propagation. Last year this time, I ended up just talking to my DX station was Manhattan. That's about as far as I could get. And this week and last week, similarly, I talked to people out of Brooklyn. That's about it. So I don't know about the rest of you guys out there. If you look, if you play around in 10 meter land, but I'm concerned that we're going to have another drought until the fall, like we did last year.
Yeah, 20 meters was really dead today. And I don't even check 10 anymore because it's been a disappointment to me. Every time I check it, it seems totally dead. Maybe one station. But 20 meters and 18, they were, 17 meters, it was all, it was dead. It gets very, very discouraging sometimes to tune around HF. But and tonight I'm looking, and 40 meters is fairly dead also tonight. I'm looking at the waterfall now, and it's fairly dead. Don't know why. I guess people have other things to do. So, all right, Roy, I will forge ahead. I will, I'll send you the sweep, the SWR sweep on this, on my UHF, VHF antenna, and I'll show you what I was talking about with just infinite fees. They don't mean anything. All right, 73, thanks, W2BZ.
Okay, yes, David.
I hope you're having an excellent evening. And I just wanted to say that just before I was listening on 20 meters, and I heard two stations from Brazil coming in loud and clear. Yeah, a few days ago, I worked a station in Austria. She also has a station in Saudi Arabia. And I worked in Saudi Arabia and also in Austria. I had very nice conversation. I wouldn't say 20 meters is dead.
Well, I didn't mention it. Like I said, this morning there was some activity on 20, but 10 meters has been dead the last two Sundays for my net. I've only talked to people in the metropolitan area for over 2 hours' time,
not a single out-of-state contact. So my concern is that this is going to be like it was last spring and into the summer, and it only got better when it hit fall because apparently the geomagnetic storms disrupt the F1, F2 layers. So even if they're active and sunspots are firing, it still doesn't really work for 10 meters. So I hope that's not what's going on. But in my observations were that 10 meters was very problematic. You know, 20 might not be the most active that I've seen it, but I saw some activity on it today.
Well, when 10 meters was busy, a lot of activity there, not too long ago. 12 meters and also 15 meters were very active. You know, you can make a lot of contacts on those three bands, and it was quite amazing. I hope that what you're saying is not true, and we'll get more propagation and more contacts on all the HF bands.
I hope so too, David.
WB2VX, Elroy.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, I think I saw, I'm not sure whether it was on the ARRL or whether it was one of Dr. Tamitha's video. Probably one of hers, because she gets a little more sophisticated. I think she had said that there's some evidence of more activity on the sun in the northern hemisphere rather than the southern hemisphere, and that suggests that we're going to have another sunspot peak next fall. So it's it's still hope for this sunspot cycle, but I kind of agree with everybody that so far the cycle has been kind of disappointing. Go ahead.
Well, the last cycle, 24, had a dual peak.
Yeah, it did. Because I remember we still had a second peak around the time I first got back on HF from a remote site in, I think, around 2015 or 2016, and just at the tail end of the second peak and got to work some DDX. That's the prediction, that she thinks we have a second peak in the fall. The most spectacular one, I know it was before you were a ham, was back in 1972 when I became a ham after the 1968 peak and thought, oh, well, you know, I missed all the phone, it's fun. And then suddenly, I think in April of 72, the band suddenly... April 71 or 72, I think the band suddenly sprang open and stayed open until the fall. It's kind of incredible. So hopefully we'll have something like that happen again. Go ahead.
I hope so. This particular cycle is very strange. It's not particularly that it ebbs and flows, because last spring and summer we had this problem where for no apparent reason you would look at the numbers were beautiful, the number of sunspot, it's very active, and yet you go on 10 meters and it's dead as a doornail. And I think the ARRL suggested that it was geomagnetic storms complicating the situation. And the year before then, I think during the late spring, early summer, we had a similar period of time where 10 meters were dead. But, I mean, if you look at the actual sunspot activity, there's no particular dip for those events. Apparently, there's other things going on simultaneously that they're suggesting is geomagnetic storms. And so I think we're going to get... I'm concerned that we might get this again, having gone through 2 years of this exact same thing. This could just be a couple of bad weeks, and I'll be a happy camper, or it could be the beginning of something very similar to last year during spring and summer and the year before, a little bit earlier than that and a little bit shorter than that. But, you know, I'm seeing its own little cycle within a cycle that concerns me.
All right, I think there was somebody else who wanted to get in there with a comment, Wood.
Yeah, it was a very short transmission. The person with the short transmission, if you'd like to try again, please do.
Let's chat again, I'm sorry. I heard the same story that BXO said about a week or so ago. I do a lot of listening on 40 meters, and there's one particular group that talks all around the world all the time. They got big antennas, they use full power, and they talk to Australia every morning. You can hear them, and I can't even hear these guys. I mean, once everyone say, wow, they're talking to somebody in Australia, and then I got to hear a little bit of it, but they got big antennas, you know. And then they were talking, had a discussion about conditions, and they got around to saying exactly the same thing that BXO said, that there's going to be another, activity increase coming. Their prediction is that there's going to be another peak, second peak is going to come. And so, just have to sit back, get your antennas ready, put them up, get them rolling, and get everything working well, and then get on the air. I did try 10 meters before I shut my radio off. I heard nobody in the HF and, you know, sideband, and heard nobody. But I only listened for 5 minutes. But a lot of times, you know, the old story is if everybody just listens and nobody calls CQ, I call a lot of CQ and I get good results. Actually calling CQ. If nobody gets on and they don't hear nobody and they call CQ, and if everybody just turns the radio on and scans back and forth and doesn't hear anybody, of course you're not gonna find anybody to talk to. So you gotta get on the air, and you have to give it an effort. Call CQ. How hard is it to call CQ? You know, give it 5 minutes at least, something like that. 10 minutes. Put 10 minutes into it, and you'd be surprised what happens.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Yes, Sam. How you doing?
Doing good. I've been listening to the show on the net, and it's going very well. If you're copying me, I have a couple tech questions. Back to you.
Sure. Well, let me just kind of put in my 2 cents. I gave 10 meters, not 5 minutes, not 10 minutes. I gave them 2 hours. For 2 hours, with my linear set to low, with 500 watts spraying out my antenna, I chatted with people in Brooklyn, and no one came back. Almost in the old days, almost every week there inevitably was a guy from Texas, a different guy from Texas each week. But I gave 10 meters 2 hours of my time this morning, and all I talked to was from film. We'll see what happens. I hope their predictions come true. It's not that crazy a prediction, once again, since that's exactly what happened with cycle 24. We had two peaks, so it's not difficult to guess that we might have two peaks again. So we'll see what happens. So over to you, Sam.
Thank you. I concur. 10 meters has been dead recently. I wasn't around this morning, but I can tell you that's been my experience over the past 2 weeks. And, well, here are my questions. One, what factors, Roy, go into the sunspots, how many sunspots are good or bad, how many storms are good or bad, the criteria underlying a little bit of the forecasting of the bands. Back to you.
Okay, so basically we have presently an 11-year sunspot cycle. For whatever reason, depending upon the guy who models suns, approximately every 11 years we go through a